This is because it takes a while for the immune system to muster a response to the new invader. About 6 to 8 weeks after a person is first infected with HIV, they may experience flu-like symptoms due to the high number of viruses in their bloodstream. Normally, the immune system starts to get the upper hand at this point and the symptoms go away. If this person's blood is sampled, the virus is still present, but the person appears to have normal health. Then, much later, sometimes several years later, symptoms return. This means that the immune system has been overwhelmed and the disease has progressed to full-blown AIDS, a condition in which a devastated immune system can no longer fight off infection. Unless aggressively treated, death is inevitable. Why does HIV appear to go dormant only to reemerge with lethal results? During the course of an infection, a deadly race is being run. On one side is the virus's ability to adapt. On the other, the immune system's ability to adapt. Each time a virus reproduces, random mistakes are made in the viral genes. This happens in all organisms when genomes are copied. These mistakes are called mutations. In most organisms, the rate of mutation is low, and usually the mistakes in the sequence are quickly repaired. HIV is different. HIV is a retrovirus, which means that its genome is stored as RNA instead of DNA. It also means that one of the first steps in the process of HIV infection is the conversion of the RNA genome into DNA, a process called reverse transcription. This process, which never takes place in human cells, is very prone to errors, much more so than normal DNA replication. In fact, during the course of a 24-hour period, it is estimated that the billions of HIV viral particles produced in an infected human have mutated every possible base position in the HIV genome at least 1,000 times, a very high rate of mutation. The consequence is that many, if not most, of the newly produced viruses simply do not survive attack from the host's immune system. So then, why would such a sloppy process end up so deadly? You'd think that this would lead to the host defeating the virus and not the other way around. But consider this. Some of the virus particles do survive, and these survivors produce offspring. These offspring carry the new genetic message and can be further refined to counter the host's immune system. Over the course of an infection, the HIV genetic instructions become increasingly fine-tuned to the host's immune system. If this process progresses sufficiently, the person will develop AIDS and the immune system will not be able to fight off other pathogens. HIV thus has the potential to evolve rapidly. The result is that HIV may counter the host's immune system, and it will win the race unless treatment is administered. With regard to our discussion of natural selection, there are two key points to this story. 1. The high mutation rate of HIV's genetic material creates a great deal of genetic variation in the virus population. This variability affects the ability of the virus to survive the environment of the immune system. Since it is genetic information, this variation is passed between generations of viruses. 2. HIV produces billions of viral particles in a day. Most do not survive, but a few do. Putting together these two points, you can see that those viruses with resistance to the immune system can pass these characteristics on to the next generation of HIV. This, in turn, leads to a viral population more resistant to the immune system. This is natural selection at work. More than 150 years ago, Charles Darwin proposed the theory of natural selection as a mechanism to explain the diversity of life on this planet. He was a meticulous observer of nature. He based his theory on two important observations. 1. He noted that populations of all sorts of organisms produce many more offspring than needed for replacement. If all these offspring survive to reproduce, a population would quickly outgrow its environment. 2. He noted that populations of organisms have a lot of variation, and he proposed that this variation is inherited. From these two observations, Darwin made a simple yet profound inference.